Welcome to April 2024, and we are embarrassed to come back on the podcast after being on a hiatus for 3 months. This is Mindful Conversations. Yeah, blow the dust off your phone or your podcast application, Dr. Rob. Mindful
Conversations with who?
Dr. Rob and Matt. We're back. Ashamed.
We're back.
We are so ashamed. We have been too busy that we have not prioritized laying down new episodes. This is episode 52.
Wow.
Our last episode was back in January, and it was on New Life, New You. And but I did peek at our podcast. Those of you, there's like four of you left in the debris field
of neglect.
Of neglect. Four of you have stayed faithful. You're going to get a brand new Mindful Conversations coffee mug signed by Dr. Rob herself.
All right.
Because you've been faithful. Thank you for not failing us, even though we feel like we have failed our listeners. Welcome,
yes.
Welcome back. No, seriously. Those of you who have tuned into this, I had to like blow the dust off of our operating studio equipment and like let my brain remember what buttons to push and things like that. But it is so good to get back here in this seat across from my good friend, Dr. Rob.
It's mutual.
So we can have conversations about meaningful topics.
Meaningful topics to us and hopefully you.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, we're in the April spring time frame and things are, you can see green is growing.
Yes, it is.
Outside. And then the temperature is dropping. Like there was snow on my car last night when I left work.
In Michigan.
Yeah. And I was like, today I'm in Dr. Rob's office. That's where our studio is. And he's got this really cool heat panel right over my head. And so whenever I'm in the office here and I'm here by myself, I will like tap that bad boy on. And I have like a sauna like radiating down.
Yes, you do.
From the heaven. So I'm a happy camper because it's been cold today.
And you are warm.
And I'm warm. Warm in heart.
Yes.
And
we're always warm in heart.
And the top of my head. No, seriously, we are wanting today to explore a conversation on triggers.
Yes.
That's the conversation inspiration that we came up with, and we want to explore that in the conversation. And Dr. Rob, it would be important for me to say I never get triggered around you.
Well, I'm glad. It's mutual.
Now, I have to say that's not true. Early on, you had kind of a big personality, and I did have triggers with like we did an abuse of authority or abuse of power a long time ago, a couple of years ago on the podcast, and I had come away from some abusive authority abuse of power things, and I didn't know you real well when I started here at RCC in my internship back in 2018.
Yes.
And,
I remember that.
Or 2016, actually. And I remember not trusting you. So there was definitely a trigger in me that I had to resolve over time if I was going to work here, and trust had to be rebuilt. But tell me what's your operational definition of what a trigger is?
That's a good question.
And we're not talking about the trigger on your gun.
Right. I think a trigger involves both implicit and generally implicit memory. And anything can be a trigger, particularly when you're talking about traumatic responses, right? So you mentioned an authority or being asked a question or being the center of attention. So a trigger to me is a response that is triggered by some stimuli in a person's environment. Could be memory, could be smell. Usually I think of it in terms of being provided by either one of the five senses or a memory of. And it triggers, the word triggers an emotional, biological, typically, response mm-hmm. in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Cognitive, emotional, biological response.
Would you say, because you're kind of like a traumatologist.
That's one of my areas I study most frequently, yes.
You're well-studied in trauma.
Yeah.
Okay. And we use the language of like small T trauma versus big T trauma, meaning that trauma doesn't have to be really big.
No.
It can be smaller things that can still be traumatic.
Yes. And it can be cumulative.
Right. Right. Yeah. So would it be fair for me to say that everybody probably deals with some form of trigger?
I would think so. You know, with trauma, we focus on the problematic triggers. That traumatologists will say the past is the present with trauma. So the brain doesn't make good distinctions. So even though the thing that traumatized me happened a long time ago, if it isn't resolved appropriately, it can lead to my brain and body perceiving that situation as if it's currently happening. Hence yep. the trigger, right?
So
I do think you're right. Most of us do have something in our backgrounds that trigger us.
So we are both trained in EMDR. So eye movement, desensitizing, reprocessing.
Yep.
It's a protocol that we use. It's a theory-based protocol that we use to help people who are managing when they come to us with a presenting problem.
Yes.
And usually that problem is in the present. Like they're dealing with anxiety or intrusive thoughts or disturbances of one thing or another. And we then understand that there are triggers associated with these presenting issues. And we can identify in the present what the trigger is.
Yeah.
And then we can identify through this protocol, we can identify where historically there are experiences, memories of experiences that the person has had that are similar to the trigger they are experiencing in the present.
Yeah. Implicit memories. Trauma memories aren't stored explicitly. Like you and I remember going to the lake last year. That explicit, we can talk about our experiences there. Implicit memories are usually, particularly with victims of trauma, they're stored in the body as emotion.
Yeah.
Right? And then when something triggers that person, those trauma memories come flooding back
mm-hmm.
as if it is currently happening or recently has happened.
So we generally say there's data associated with the storage of a memory.
Yes.
Like cognitions.
Yep.
Feelings, emotion.
Yep. Body sensations. Because you know what? If I'm trying to think of something that you like. Let's say if you like pie and I say apple pie, your brain can conjure up not only the image of apple pie, but you can... You can tell me what it smells like.
Dude, my wife can make a sick apple pie. I mean,
I have to try it.
I mean, for real.
Good.
For real, like I could eat the whole pie with vanilla ice cream.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Like, I'm on that.
And I could eat like the whole thing. Like one
yep.
piece is like too much, but then all I want to do is just keep eating.
Yep. I'm with you.
So, see, you bring that up and bam.
That's exactly right. That's a good example of a more positive trigger, right? It's a memory. It's something that is important to you or that's a part of your world. And when I mention that, you could provide a lot of detail.
I think that's important. You just kind of reframe the idea that triggers are both positive and negative.
Yes. I think so. And I think
so something could trigger me and I could think about apple pie.
Yeah.
Or I could think about a great vacation I took with a friend.
Yeah.
You know, I can see a mountain and then I can get triggered to go back to the time I was with my buddies, you know, in Colorado in 2020, where we climbed a mountain, right? I could have, and then all of a sudden my memory network could give me even more data.
That's exactly right.
About the trip. And it's really pleasant because I get to relive the journey, the adventure.
Yeah. And because it's on the positive side of the equation, it doesn't create relational or problematic behaviors for you.
No.
Right? It's enjoyable. What gets all the attention are the traumatic triggers, the negative triggers, those things that the brain has trouble making sense of.
So give me an example of we'll call it a negative trigger, a trigger that produces a disturbance. And then let's unpack what happens when a trigger is not managed. How does that affect a person and their well-being?
Okay, so let's take something like being ignored. Let's say in a dysfunctional family that I grew up in, you know, needs were not met. I was frequently ignored. You and I have a decent relationship, but I haven't resolved or completely resolved that issue with, let's say, a parent. And then you and I are going along and you're not intentional with it. You're just preoccupied and you ignore me. Now, all of a sudden, I'm angry with you. I'm hurt because you've ignored me. And my brain goes to a place where it can't separate the past from the present. And I attribute to you past experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's really profound in my world, I could then, let's say, go off on you or be ticked with you and say, Matt, why are you ignoring me? You're like, well, I didn't mean to. That's a lie. You know you did mean. Everybody ignores me.
And the guy or the partner that's with them is like, what?
That's exactly right. It's.
I was just eating my apple pie.
That's exactly right.
And you're blowing up on me. What is wrong with you?
And so the context is all distorted.
Yeah.
Right. The current data of you're just eating your apple pie, and I may not even notice that you didn't even notice me walk in the room. Right. So that data gets ignored, so to speak, or pushed out by the historical reality that, oh, somebody important to me ignored me, and you're somebody important to me in the present, and you're doing the same thing to me they did back then, and now I'm overreacting. I was triggered into an emotional behavioral response that you have no context for.
Wouldn't that be the breeding ground for passive aggressive behavior?
Totally. Yeah, because I'm picking up your pie and I'm either eating it or throwing it.
Right. It's like, I was just trying to enjoy pie.
That's exactly right.
Right, yeah. But the trigger was real for the person who's experiencing the intrusive imagination.
That's exactly right. But the interpretation of the data
is fragmented.
Right.
Right. And they may or may not be aware of this at all.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so you could live in a relationship, because I think triggers like this have a big impact on relationships.
Oh, totally.
And if you're not aware of where the trigger is being sourced, now the proverbial, I have to walk on eggshells around Rob in the office.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm at a loss as to how to communicate, because now I recognized I did something that is not conducive for the relationship. And that then adds to the shame and guilt or whatever it might be that I'm dealing with.
Yeah. And their partner is most likely not equipped to interpret this in a healthy way.
No.
So they've got to deal with their own interpretation and management of, well, I'm definitely not eating apple pie anymore.
Yeah.
Not around them.
That's exactly right. And so now I've created a problem sort of for them. Now, like with you, it would be different because you're healthy and you would say, what is going on? And you would force a conversation with me and help me kind of slow it down and see it. But, you know, that could get old too if there's a lot of triggers in my world and you're constantly bumping into them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the most common trigger that I manage with the people that I work with have to do with infidelity.
Yeah. Yeah. With your expertise and your area of interest.
Because what happens is a betrayal of trust happens. And then the reality that was in the relationship is now shattered. And now there's no real ability to reconstruct something. That will take time to reconstruct a new reality if both people are interested in working on the relationship, right? But the betrayed partner has to deal, well, they both do, but the betrayed partner has to deal with a series of triggers now, like seeing their, if the affair was discovered on the phone via digital text and they see their partner on the phone, it can be a very quick and easy trigger for the betrayed partner to see their partner. What are you doing?
Well, the phone rings. Who are you talking to?
Who are you talking to?
Who are you talking to? And you mentioned it earlier, Matt. Whether it's EMDR or some other technique, you do have to desensitize and reprocess those triggers so they don't carry with them the ability, like a hair trigger on a gun, right? It's like it's ultra sensitive. And if you don't desensitize and reprocess those triggers, then you and the relationships are kind of at the mercy of when they, you know, it seems like we're using a lot of gun metaphors, but a sniper attack, right? The trigger, it's like, oh, I didn't see this coming.
Well, you can get to a place where you can identify your triggers, no question.
Oh, yeah.
Where you could be in the position where you could identify what the trigger is.
Yep.
You have to be emotionally smart.
Yeah.
You know, the book, The Body Keeps Score.
Yeah.
The idea that what the brain forgets, the body remembers.
Yep. That's the implicit memories, right? Those are stored as, trying to think of how to best say that. The two responsibilities of the brain are to protect and to connect.
Yeah.
And we're in the protection arena, right? And so when you're in this protection mode, these implicit memories, the brain is really good at searching out and perceiving threat. Well, it can be real or imagined. And the problem with saying imagined is like these historical triggers, they weren't imagined back then.
No.
They were reality. It's just that they haven't been, their power hasn't been desensitized and they haven't been reprocessed. So now they're alive and well. The past is the present.
Yeah.
And the brain doesn't make that distinction.
So this would be an issue of reconciliation.
Yeah. What do you mean?
So just follow me for a moment. So the idea is I experienced something very challenging, very difficult. Infidelity,
yeah,
loss of a loved one, car accident,
rape.
The list can be so expansive. The understanding that the brain is designed to reprocess information. I mean, the science behind it says that we do a lot of processing during sleep.
Yes.
Like sleep is not a passive process. Yes. It's actually very, very active. My brain, I tell you what, my brain does technicolor reprocessing. I have all kinds of weird stories that develop while my brain is processing the daily news.
Yeah.
And I have fun. Honestly, most of my dreams are really fun. I have a lot of flying dreams.
Yeah, it's cool.
So I have all that, but, REM, so rapid eye movement,
yep,
is the phase of sleep that generally happens later in the sleep cycle.
A deep sleep, yeah.
It's usually very, very deep, and it's when the brain is probably putting together all the data, and I'm making this simple, but like it organizes the pantry.
Yeah.
Right. Its desire is to organize data in a way that makes sense.
Right.
Would that be inaccurate?
That is true. That there's, the brain specializes in organizing data and seeing patterns.
So it's designed to do that, but it needs our cooperation.
Yeah.
Like it can't do that on its own. It will do what it's designed to do, but I have to do something in the area. Like reconciliation would mean that happened. Like I was a butthead to my wife today.
Yeah.
I said something that I shouldn't say. Okay. I need to go back to her.
No pie for you.
No pie for me. I need to go back to her because the way I treated her was unjust. It wasn't regarding her, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so my conscience is clear.
Yeah.
I've taken a step toward, and I'm making this really simple, I've taken a step to reconcile what happened. Now, if we step it up a notch and we get into something that's, you know, more difficult, you're trained in CISM, you know, critical incident stress management. The idea that if there's, you know, a school shooting, or something happens and students are exposed to a traumatic experience, you going in and helping them reprocess what happened is a reconciliation, or maybe you have a better word.
Yeah, the word reconciliation with CISM, that's a series of different tools in a toolbox. And then with schools, they use CISD, or Critical Incident Stress Debriefing. But it does help the brain, based on the research, process that current trauma in such a way that increases the probability of it not creating problems in the future.
Exactly.
Right? And so in that sense, if you're using the word reconciliation, I'm still processing that. It does seem to be a good word, but you're I don't want to say making peace with the past, but you're accepting the past, your brain can process the past and do it in such a way that doesn't carry with it all the emotionality of that would be normal for that event.
So if I experience a traumatic event and I just said, hey, it doesn't matter, I'm leaving, it didn't affect me, I'm going to go on with my life and I'm going to suppress all these things and just kind of go back to the rhythm of my life, I might think that that's true, that I can just walk away from this, but didn't my body experience the traumatic event?
Yeah, I have a concrete example.
Yeah.
A few years back, there was a shooting in Kalamazoo where people died. At the beginning of that shooting rampage happened in our apartment complex. So I saw a woman get shot and the guy attempted to shoot 7 children with her. And I attempted to get the license plate. I didn't process it as a firecracker. I thought the caliber of the gun was probably a 9mm because they're popular. So my brain was making all sense. I was in the upstairs in my office looking out, and I heard the first shot and went to the window and saw the whole thing happen. I was the second guy on scene to get down there. I don't know where the first guy came from. So that's the context. So I do an EMDR session. And what I wasn't aware of is this reality. I didn't feel at all responsible for anything. I mean, you know, we couldn't just run out. He was shooting at everybody he saw. And so I was conservative about running out, trying to get the license plate for the law enforcement. But then in the EMDR session I did, as a result of that shooting, I even said, well, I worked in the inner city Detroit where there was gang violence and stuff like that. So I was kind of already desensitized, if you will. Here's the connection that my brain made that I didn't realize it made until that EMDR session. I felt responsible for not getting the license plate. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get the license plate. He went around the corner too fast. And that that issue was embedded deep in my psyche.
Yep.
So even though if you had asked me, I would have said, no, I'm not responsible. He turned the corner too fast. I would have given you I got a good description of the car, which was the only thing I was able to get, and I gave it to law enforcement. But embedded in that data was the interpretation that because I was focused on the license plate and I didn't get that, when he went to the next location and killed two more people or shot at, well, they died. The woman that I saw didn't die. It permanently changed her life. But when he killed the next two and then four more after that, it was like, I might have been able to prevent that.
Yeah.
If I had gotten that license plate, nobody would hold me responsible.
Right.
But my brain did.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you're saying. You didn't have eyes on how embedded.
That's exactly right.
That belief system, I'm responsible.
Yeah, I'm somehow responsible.
Right.
And so that to me is a practical. Now, I dealt with it. So I did get desensitized and reprocess that information. And that going from the unconscious implicit to the explicit, I'm now aware of it, was a big deal.
Yeah.
Because now I can deal with it.
Yeah. And I think that's what we in general want to do, is to identify, you know, what kind of emotions is a person experiencing that represents a potential trigger.
Yeah.
Maybe rejection or betrayal, like I had mentioned. Yep. Or maybe you have experienced an unjust treatment like abuse of power. Maybe you felt helpless or out of control, being excluded. You mentioned the one of being ignored, you know, being disapproved of, feeling unwanted, feeling, you know, insecure, just loss of independence. You need to be, as we always preach on this, you know, podcast, is self-awareness.
Yeah.
You know, be aware. Does something trigger that emotional response in you? Because emotions and thoughts will co-conspire to form behaviors.
Yes.
And usually if it's maladaptive, it's going to create unhealthy behaviors.
Totally. Even if the behaviors are, or the emotions are appropriate for one context, and they're allowed, let's say, to linger, or you're not curious about them, or you don't address them, when you take those same appropriate emotions and behaviors in one context and you transport them to a different context, they're no longer appropriate or necessary.
Right.
And that's what I think you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, an easy way to document, is there truth to this in my life? Well, just notice when you have big emotional reactions in the place that you're at.
Yeah. Be curious about that.
Stay curious, and then listen to your body.
Yeah.
Heart, stomach, any shakiness, dizziness, you know, things like that, that you, 'cause your body's giving you information.
Yes. Learn to read it.
It's not coincidence.
Right.
And you're not wrong for having those experiences. When you're having a somatic reaction, it's not your fault.
Yeah, it's an autonomic response. I would add, listen to the people around you that have a credible and trusted track record. Going back to the story of the shooting, I said to my team here at the center, I'm fine.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
You were like, not that you were puffed up. You were being you.
Yeah, I'm fine. I've got some experience with this. I'm really okay. But it was you and others on the team who said, really, you need to do this thing. You need to do this thing. You need to deal with this. And we had the opportunity to, with another EMDR trained therapist, to do that. And I was thinking about submitting to the authority or the influence of the team that led to that. And really, it was a wise thing to do. So long-winded way to say, you know, when you've got people trusting or that are trustworthy in your world and they're concerned, don't fight them.
Yeah.
Just, what do you have to lose?
Exactly.
You know, they're not doing it for some personal gain or agenda. They're doing it because they care about you.
Yeah.
And then don't make it hard for them to care about you.
Yeah. Now, let's bring it back to a more everyday kind of germane type of example. So notice, for example, that you spend the day deep cleaning your apartment or your house and you rearrange the living room. Your partner comes home from work and you wait excitedly for them to comment, to notice and comment on what you have accomplished.
Yep.
Instead, they head to the kitchen for a snack. They settle into the sofa without saying a single word. You stand by disappointed that all of your hard work has been unacknowledged, and you start to get angry and frustrated. You can hear your heart pounding and your jaw clenching. It takes everything for you not to snap and say something like, you notice anything different, honey? Or, I can't believe you're so oblivious, right? And the guy is just like on the couch eating popcorn. It's like, but notice even these little things that are percolating up to the surface. Notice your emotional reaction.
Right. And if it doesn't fit, then you have to really pay attention to that. Because it's like, okay, did you do it for accolades or did you do it because the apartment needed cleaning? Let that inform your brain, if you will. Let that, like you said earlier, take notice of that data. Because they're not doing it intentionally.
No.
They've had a hard day.
No, this is about your interpretation.
That's exactly right.
Of what you had hoped for. And it is important for us with emotional intelligence in mind. It's important for us to validate these very awesome emotions.
Yeah.
God created you as an emotional being. That is not wrong.
No.
You being aware of the emotion and the amplitude of the emotion. Maybe you could speak just for a moment about window of tolerance in terms of our ability to tolerate these ebbs and flows.
So typically the window of tolerance, there's different definitions or different focuses, but the one that I think is most relevant is the window of tolerance is your ability to keep rational thought, executive functioning online at the same time that you're dealing with difficult emotions.
Yeah.
If you go hyper, which is too high, it creates all kinds of, it takes your executive functioning, your ability to rationally think things through offline. If you go hypo, too low, it does the same thing. And so the goal for healthy people is to have a decent width of that window of tolerance so that they're, it's not often where I go above or below the window of tolerance, taking my executive functioning offline. So what would happen is you came home, I didn't notice all the hard work that you did. I didn't say anything. And you immediately go hyper and get angry or hypo and you're depressed and sad because I didn't notice it. And now the relationship is influenced and maybe I should have noticed it, but it really it would be difficult because I'm living with you. The apartment is familiar. There's a lot of dynamics potentially going on that would cause me not to notice it. But your response to that, if you go above or below your window of tolerance, that's where it's going to create problems relationally.
That's where we get elevated.
Yep. Hyper.
And maybe after we get elevated, that's when we go south and we get low.
Yeah. Right?
And here is an example of this, you know, particular scenario we're referencing, it's like if you've done some work and you have been smart and you're sensitive to your own emotions and you can step back for a moment and realize those emotions are telling you something about yourself, you can collect yourself in real time.
Yeah.
In real time. And you can say, hey, this is important to me. Like what I did today is super important to me. And I also know the alternative viewpoint is I know that my partner, for whatever reason, may not be aware of what I've done. And so I might go to them and say, hey, babe, you know, I know that you probably didn't notice this. That's your soft startup, you know, but it was really important for me for you to notice that I'd cleaned and reorganized the apartment. That's just something that's really important to me. And I want you to be able to notice that.
That's exactly right. And that's an appropriate, healthy response. The window of tolerance in trauma is that optimal arousal zone, so to speak, the window of tolerance, where you have these feelings, these powerful feelings, can be tolerated because you recognize you're safe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what you and I are talking about has multiple applications. And trying to, you know, trying to simplify it or understand it, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts, but to your point, I do generally think of the window of tolerance as that ability of an individual to have difficult emotion, appropriate emotion, difficult emotion, and at the same time keeping rational or executive functioning online.
Yeah.
Because once the emotion takes over and executive functioning is deleted, let's say, then you're driven purely by those emotions and you need both of them to make good decision.
For sure. For sure. Big topic, not going to unpack everything in this short 30 minute episode. So some closing thoughts as we just have a conversation about triggers. Be smart.
Yes.
Again, notice what environments create reactions in you. Step back. Be curious. Stay curious. Notice what's happening in the moment. Validate your feelings, your emotions. Give yourself some space.
Yeah.
Keep an open mind. Like, remember Brooks Gibbs? Like, let's not be rigid.
Yeah.
Let's be flexible. Let's be open.
That's good.
Learn to be open. And then be open to communication. Find, again, that trusted person that you can be honest with. And if that's your partner, let that door be open. If it's a good friend or a counselor, and do the processing so you're not, in a sense, victimized by a reoccurring trigger.
Yeah.
And if needed, seek professional help.
That's where I would have gone.
Right?
Right. You know, if you're triggered by a lot of different things, then muster up the courage, because it's going to take some courage to address those historical traumas.
Totally. Totally.
It was good to be back.
It is. I feel that muscle memory has saved us once again. Kind of like riding a bike. We're back in the saddle. But no, very good to be with you, Dr. Rob.
Likewise.
And I really do enjoy pontificating over the topics that we explore together on this program. So thanks for tuning in to Mindful Conversations with Matt and Rob. We hope that you have an awesome day, wherever that may lead you. Blessings.